Good evening and welcome. I am your host, Goblin Queen, and tonight I am going to be dishing out some leftovers. So for every video that I make, I set aside little things, stories, or just things that I find interesting when I'm researching that I didn't have time for, or maybe I just didn't think were strong enough in the main episode, so I set aside as my leftovers. These are going to be the leftovers from a video I did that I call Strange Animals, but the actual title of it is Easter Bunnies, Bipedal Cats, and Human-Faced Horses, Encounters with Strange Animals. This video was originally posted on March 3rd, 2025. And I read stories that I found from Reddit, Your Ghost Stories, and I think it's called the National Cryptid Society or something like that, all about weird animals. There was a lot of shape-shifting animals. There was a cat that was human-sized and stood on hind legs and wore overalls and a little hat. There was some large bipedal rabbits that appeared on Easter bunnies, perhaps, and some other things. So if you haven't listened to that episode, it's not essential necessarily, but check it out if you're interested. So what I'm going to read today are some stories that were actually posted, referenced in the comments section of that Easter bunny story that I read in that video. That story was about a person who had a dream. They weren't sure if it was a dream or a memory that took place on or around Easter. And they were a child. They were visiting a family member's property, I believe, a wooded property. And they were in the woods looking for their Easter basket. And sitting against a tree in the woods was a man-sized rabbit wearing a vest and perhaps smoking. So in the comments section of that story, this particular poster, Brummer65, reposted some stories that were similar to this one for the OP to take a look at. And I found them pretty interesting, so let's read some of those. The first one is from a website that's called Thought Co., and it's called Easter Bunny Sighting. This was originally posted by Mike be on March 27th, 2016. When I was about 7, I used to be curious about the Easter Bunny. So one night, I pulled an all-nighter while I was sleeping at my grandma's place with my older sister, who was 9. We were all in bed. My grandma, sister, and I were still wide awake. My sister would always hog the blankets, and I would be cold. I was trying to fight with my sleeping sister, and all of a sudden, I heard hopping downstairs. I was confused. I didn't hear the door open. Then I heard something hop up the stairs. I started to pinch myself. Yes, I was awake and cold, and I started to sweat, a bit overwhelmed. The hopping noise was coming up the stairs. I started to slightly close my eyes so the rabbit wouldn't know I'm awake. He entered the room we were in. I had my eyes closed. The creature grabbed the blanket and pulled it over me. I couldn't believe it. He hopped to the other side of the bed towards the window and just stood there. I got a quick peek. A huge rabbit, human-sized with big ears, pointed up. I was shocked. It couldn't be real. He was just standing there looking at my grandma. The sun came up and he vanished, almost like he faded into the light. I was speechless and got up and looked around. Nothing was there. You could ask me to this very day. I do believe in the Easter Bunny. I just don't believe he gives out chocolate. Okay, so I do want to make a note of something they said here. At first they say they were all in bed. My grandma, sister, and I were still wide awake. So that makes it seem like they were all in bed and they were all wide awake. But then they said they were trying to fight with their sleeping sister to get the covers. I think they were just trying to explain who was in bed, and they meant that they were the only person awake. They were all in bed, but they were awake. The only reason I point that out is because when you do come across kind of confusing or contradicting statements in a story, it can lead people to disbelieve your story because it doesn't sound like you have your story straight, but it could just be not very good writing. But also they do say that they know that there's a rabbit in the room and coming up the stairs even though they don't see it. I guess they were just going by the sounds. So I don't know. I mean, they were anticipating and kind of wishing for seeing the Easter Bunny. And then they had this experience. So I'm not sure what exactly to make of that. But they do say that it caused them to believe in the Easter Bunny to this day. Anyway, that's one of the stories that was mentioned in the comments. Another one, the commenter, their name is Brummer, I think. They copy and pasted this story into the comments. They also included the link to the website, but the story that they pasted doesn't come up with the specific link they gave. But I did go take a look at the website, and it appears to be one of those great old-fashioned ghost paranormal websites that I've always been very fond of. I spent a lot of time looking through these kinds of websites when I was a kid, and it's actually still active today. The website is called Ghosts of America, and this story took place in Azusa, California. Back around 1976, me and my friends, Gary and Richard, were out for a day of canyon carving on our motorcycles. We stopped at the Falling Springs restaurant for lunch, then began the ride down the mountain. We pulled off the road for a smoke, and as we were all sitting on our bikes talking, Gary and Richard pointed behind me with a look of utter horror and jumped off their bikes and ran. I thought they were playing a joke until I sensed movement behind me, accompanied by a really foul smell. I looked over my shoulder to catch a large figure, about 5 foot tall, darting into the bushes, thrashing through the thick brush. Needless to say, the hair stood up on the back of my neck, and is now. They told me that what they saw was a, quote, large, moldy rabbit appear behind me and stand there, bleeding out of its mouth. Further inspection of the area revealed impressions and what looked like thick saliva trailing to the brush line. Many years later, a neighbor showed me a book of witchcraft, and in the book, it said that Satan sometimes appears as a large, moldy rabbit accompanied by a foul smell. The place where we saw this apparition was north of East Fork on Highway 39. If you were traveling north on Highway 39, up the mountain, it would be on your right. There is what looks like the foundation of a building about 75 feet from the roadside, and the area leads to a narrow canyon with thick trees and brush. I wish I could find that passage that they mentioned, the book about witchcraft and Satan appearing as a large, moldy rabbit accompanied by a foul smell. I know that a lot of Bigfoot encounters, I suppose, are said to have this foul, musky, even I think like a sulfurous smell to them. It's said to accompany the presence of Bigfoot, I think. So, I don't know what book they're referencing. I do know that hares were associated as witches' familiars, and witches were believed to have been able to take the form of a hare, particularly in Ireland and Scotland. And there are different accounts of hunters chasing hares and injuring or killing the animal only to find that a woman has replaced the body of the hare. And I do have a couple examples of these. These are both from Letters on Demonology and Witchcraft by Sir Walter Scott. The first one says, quote, "In the year 1663, an old dame named Julian Cox was convicted chiefly on the evidence of a huntsman who declared on his oath that he laid his greyhounds on a hare, and coming up to the spot where he saw them mouther, there he found, on the other side of a bush, Julian Cox, lying panting and breathless in such a manner as to convince him that she had been the creature which afforded him the course. The unhappy woman was executed on this evidence." End quote. Another example of this is from a Scottish woman named Isabel Gowdy, who randomly, voluntarily, decided to confess to witchcraft in 1662, and she went into all these crazy details about having sex with the devil and demons and all her activity as a witch in league with Satan. It's very interesting. I would like to do a video on just her one day, perhaps. But she also recounts an experience of shapeshifting. Quote, "In the hair shape, Isabel herself had a bad adventure. She had been sent by the devil to Aldern in that favorite disguise, with some message to her neighbors, but had the misfortune to meet Peter Papley of Killhill's servants going to labor, having his hounds with them. The hounds sprung on the disguised witch. Quote, and I, says Isabel, run a very long time, but being hard-pressed, was forced to take to my own house, the door being open, and there took refuge behind a chest. End quote. But the hounds came in and took to the other side of the chest, so that Isabel only escaped by getting into another house and gaining time to say the disenchanting rhyme. Hair, hair, God send thee care. I am in a hare's likeness now, but I shall be a woman even now. Hair, hair, God send thee care. Such accidents, she said, were not uncommon, and the witches were sometimes bitten by the dogs, of which the marks remained after their restoration to human shape, but none had been killed on such occasions. Then I did find one more example, which I won't read, but I'll just kind of explain to you, from William Butler Yeats's book, Folklore and Fairy Tales of Ireland, one of his books on Irish fairy lore. Basically, that a hunter was chasing a rabbit with his hounds, and they even, I think, attacked the rabbit, but it got away, and they followed the trail of blood to a woman's house, who I think she might have been suspected to be a witch, but maybe not. Definitely after this. So they follow the blood to her house, and he opened the door, and she's there, sitting in a chair, and she looks very out of breath, and she was bleeding from her hand or something. I really like those accounts, those shape-shifting accounts. I wish I could shapeshift. I don't think the hair is a terrible form to take, although you just have to look out for predators. And this is similar to some of the stories, kind of the anecdotal stories that were told in the original Strange Animals video, where people saw an animal, shot it, injured it, or even killed it, and then found that the body of the animal would turn into a person. Or one of the stories was a giant pig, which they injured, but they didn't kill. And then the next day, they saw an old man with bandages, basically, the same place where the pig had injuries. All right, so I'm going to read one last story that was referenced in the comments of that Reddit thread. This last story comes from the blog associated with a YouTube channel called Altrusian Grace Media that I am not familiar with, but it seems to narrate esoteric texts. So, on March 1st, 2017, Altrusian Grace authored a post titled "The Cryptid That Got Away," seemingly about a real-life encounter they had. So, I will read that for you now. Back in the late spring, early summer of 1986, before the influx of digital distractions permeated the minds of the youth, there was the grand notion for children to go outside and play. For me, it was no different. I was around 11 or 12 years old, and my family lived on a spacious acre and a half in what was then a somewhat rural Wisconsin. My friend Joe lived next door, and he, my younger brother Mike, and I would quite often explore the woods and fields behind our property. Part of the allure was a dirt bike trail that ran parallel to some railroad tracks, and about a quarter mile south of my house, the trail led to a pair of small bridges, one for the trail and one for the train. A creek that flowed beneath them, and still does to this day, offered abundant entertainment for adolescent boys such as us. Countless hours were spent here catching minnows and crayfish, throwing rocks, and running through the surrounding cornfields. It was here at these bridges that I had my one and only encounter with a cryptid-type creature. I can't remember the time of day exactly, but if I had to guess, it was mid-afternoon, the sky being partly cloudy or a bit overcast. The bridges were separated by a steep dip, down upon which we often rode our bikes like little daredevils on a halfpipe. Joe and I were on the railroad bridge, scanning the creek below, probably chucking stones at the poor fish who happened to swim within striking distance. My brother was on the south end of the other bridge, hanging out. We were preoccupied with these very important activities when Mike gave a yelled whisper, "You guys, get over here real quick. You gotta see this. There's something on this path. We turned around towards Mike and scoffed at him, expecting him to try and play some lame joke on us. He waved hurriedly for us to run over to him as he stared north up the bike path. The foliage was heavy enough where if one of us was on the railroad track bridge, one couldn't see up the trail, and thus we begrudgingly ran down the little valley and to the other side. The creature sat on its haunches, posing much like a cat does when sitting, but appearing in that position to be about 3 feet tall. It was jet black in color, covered in sleek fur. The eyes were the same, but glistened in the daylight, making it obvious it was watching us. The ears were very rabbit-like, very erect, almost if you could imagine how Bugs Bunny's ears were depicted. From its bottom, there patiently switched back and forth a tail, also very much like a cat. The creature gave the impression of being intelligent, curious, and alert. Pondering its image now reminds me a bit like Frank the Demonic Rabbit from Donnie Darko. Never in my life had I ever seen anything like this, then or since. Being brave, or quite stupid, I told my companions that I was going to try and get closer to it. I walked slowly, one step at a time, and as I did so, the animal remained motionless, except for its tail. I suppose it was waiting to see how far I would go in, closing the gap between us, which I estimated to be about 150 feet. After making a nervous 35 to 40 foot advancement, in which I never took my eyes off of it, it turned around with lightning speed and leapt into the brush and woods to the east. At that moment, the spell of amazement was disrupted, and all of us took off running together to where it had been. In a matter of seconds, we were in the same spot the creature had been, but there was no sign of it, and no sound to be heard. It had seemed to just disappear. From this moment, we rushed back to the house where my parents were eating an early dinner and proceeded to tell them all about the encounter. As to be expected, we were greeted with laughs and dismissed as having exaggerated what we saw. For the next 2 weeks, we actively searched the surrounding areas of woods in hopes of finding tracks or even another sighting. During this period of time, we were one day hanging out by a neighbor's house and were describing our experience when he jokingly said it was probably the Hodag. The Hodag, for those unfamiliar, is a mythical folk monster that is said to reside in the northern reaches of Wisconsin and Minnesota. That's the name we adopted for it for a long time, and called it the Hodag, anytime we referred to that day back by the bridge. When I was 13 years old, I happened upon a book about cryptids and monsters that was in my middle school library. In the book was an entry about the Hodag, which showed a supposed photo of the beast, and I realized this was not the same creature we saw. The book went on to describe that the Hodag was easily captured by cutting down its favorite tree because it had no joints in its legs, having to sleep while standing up and leaning against something. Thus, when it went to lean against the tree to sleep, it would fall over, unable to stand back up, and make it prone to other predators and capture. I felt some disappointment in this revelation, thinking we had some of the answers. We were back to square one and figuring out what we saw and have been ever since. It has been one of my most cherished and vivid memories of my childhood. Has anyone else seen this thing or something like it? I'd love to hear about it or any ideas of what it may have been. Well, as I said, I'm not familiar with their YouTube channel, but they are a fantastic writer. I think they presented the memory of this experience really well. I will include the link to this post in my source list, or you can do an internet search for Altrusian Grace, the cryptid that got away, because their post does include some images that lay out the location of the experience, pulled from Google Maps, and an illustration they did of the creature they saw. It almost has a panther-like body and tail, and it's in a seated, kind of crouched position with hand-like paws that have sharp, hooked talons. And then the head is very rabbit-like, but with slitted almond eyes. They said that their drawing portrays it as much more menacing than it actually looks. It's also super jacked. Their post also includes a photograph of the Hodag, which they mention near the end of their story. It's a black and white photo that was taken in 1893, and it shows a group of men wielding pitchforks surrounding a creature on a log. This creature is about the size of a bulldog, and it looks kind of like a mixture of a bull and a bison with long clawed feet and a frog-like face. So this strange little creature is the Hodag, a fearsome critter, which are a family of beasts that were cooked up by lumberjacks as they sat around campfires at night within logging camps and exchanged tall tales to pass the long dark hours. So the Hodag is not alleged to be a real creature. It's just something made up for fun. But the story of the Hodag was picked up by Eugene Shepherd, who was in the timber business, and also was apparently a known prankster. In the 1890s, Shepherd began writing newspaper articles about the Hodag, claiming its discovery and capture, providing photographs, such as the one that Altruzzi and Grace included on their blog, and a live specimen, which he displayed at a county fair. It was not a live specimen. I don't know what it's made of, if it's made out of wood or what, but he even somehow fooled people into thinking it was real by hooking wires up to this inanimate creature, which caused it to move slightly from time to time. Finally, though, he was forced to admit it was all a hoax when the Smithsonian announced that they would be coming to Wisconsin to inspect the specimen. So he was forced at that point to admit that it was a hoax. However, the Hodag's legacy lives on in Rhinelander, Wisconsin as the high school mascot, and there are statues and figures of the creature dotted around the town in different buildings and in public places. And I have a quick aside. As I was reading up on the Hodag, I came across a 2023 article from the Green Bay Press Gazette that lists a handful of Wisconsin cryptids, and I have to mention one legend they wrote of about the phantom chickens of Seymour. Apparently, a legend stands that on a rural farm road, aptly named Chicken Alley, phantom chickens may be seen crossing the road. The chickens are apparently nowhere to be found once your car happens to collide with them. Here's what the Shadowlands Haunted Places Index says about the area. Quote, "You will be chased by what appears to be snowmobile lights, but it never gets any closer. You'll drive through a haunted lumberyard forest on the way. There's also a large tree that only appears with a full moon in the background. You will see wild chickens running around, and if you get out of your car at the crossroads, and you are the only one there, a disembodied voice will yell at you." End quote. That's pretty fun stuff. Never heard of a phantom chicken legend before, so it is strange and it involves animals, so I think it fits in with our theme tonight. In the main video, we got into some really interesting folklore regarding different shapeshifters and werebeasts. So I'd like to take this opportunity to bring up some information I recently learned about werewolf beliefs in Estonia. I became interested in Estonian werewolf folklore because of a 2017 film called November, which is based on a novel by Andris Kivirok. The book, unfortunately, I can't read because there isn't an English translation, but the film is absolutely gorgeous and often disturbing, so watch at your own discretion. But it's shot completely in black and white, and it is filled to the brim with folklore and legends that were totally unknown to me, and so fascinating, and I found myself looking up as much of it as I could. The main character of the film, a young woman named Lena, can transform herself into a wolf, and she does so by getting completely naked and rubbing herself with some kind of fat or oil. This really intrigued me because it's not the way typical Western media werewolf is depicted as transforming, which of course generally involves a full moon. I mentioned this in the main episode, but it deserves to be reiterated because I did not know this. As Estonian illustrator and curator Viva Noor puts it, quote, "The most feared and simultaneously most revered predator of any area has typically been known as its local shapeshifter," end quote. That is so interesting to me. So a place where wolves are the most dangerous or most feared or most ferocious predator would have werewolves as their shapeshifter. But somewhere where there are tigers, it might be a were-tiger. Or maybe somewhere where there are no wolves, it would be something else. I would imagine there's were-bears. So that's just really cool to me, that the local shapeshifter depends on the local predators. If there aren't wolves in the area, there aren't going to be werewolves, potentially, according to folklore. So the wolf is Estonia's national animal, so perhaps it's no surprise that they have a rich history of werewolves. So there are different kinds of werewolves. You could be cursed to become a werewolf by a witch, or if you are a witch, you can voluntarily become a werewolf. Here's something that I was really struck by. I came across this in a couple different sources, but I'm going to read now from Estonian Mythology by folklorist Matthias Johan Eisen, published in 1919. Quote, "It is said the witches can sometimes transform themselves, but also other people, into wolves. Folklore knows many tales of wedding guests transformed into werewolves. At the peak of their joyous celebration, the wedding guests meet or pass by a witch. Suddenly, the witch raises her staff, to which the wedding couple, sometimes along with a group of other guests, are transformed into werewolves. Sometimes, the witch asks for shelter or something else at the newlywed's house. When her request is refused, she transforms the bridal couple into werewolves. Those who are transformed into werewolves stay in one pack." End quote. And the reason that struck me is because of this scene from the 1984 film The Company of Wolves, which is an adaptation of a short story by the great Angela Carter. I've read one of her stories on my channel, and I absolutely love her. I love the movie. My good friend James Gracie, who sometimes reads passages on my channel, has written a book about the movie. But in the movie, there's a part where a grandmother is telling her granddaughter a folktale about a peasant woman who was taken as a lover by some man of high social standing, a duke or a lord or some such person, and she becomes pregnant with his baby. Come to find out, months into her pregnancy, he's betrothed to another woman, and the peasant woman, who is a witch, perhaps, shows up to their wedding reception and turns everyone into wolves, and they all run away in one pack, still with all their fancy powdered wigs on and gowns and such. It's amazing. The movie is so visually stunning. A lot of people think it's really weird, but it's great. So I was thrilled to discover that because I knew about that scene from that movie, and I'm not surprised that Angela Carter pulled it from folklore, but I just didn't know that folklore. Here is what the line from the actual short story says. Quote, "A witch from up the valley once turned an entire wedding party into wolves because the groom had settled on another girl. She used to order them to visit her at night from spite, and they would sit and howl around her cottage for her, serenading her with their misery." End quote. Highly recommend Angela Carter if you aren't familiar. Like I said, I read one of her stories on my channel if you want to listen to that and get a taste for it. So, one of the ways a witch can turn herself into a werewolf is by wearing a wolf skin. So, all you need to do to become a werewolf is to wear a wolf. MJ Eisen writes, quote, "Some witches carry a wolf skin with them in a bag or a bundle so that they can become werewolves instantly when needed." End quote. Other ways to become a werewolf include walking around certain objects three times, and what this object is varies from place to place. Quote, "Some walk around a stone on all fours three times. In Viandimaa, it's believed that one must crawl backwards three Thursday evenings in a row beneath a bent tree. In another area's lore, one must roll around on a wide, flat stone for three Thursday evenings and say an incantation. Incantations are often accompanied with the act of thrice circling. You can, of course, also transform into a wolf by rubbing a magic ointment on your skin, which is the method I saw in the movie November that got me interested in this subject in the first place." I also thought this was interesting. This is from folklorist Mariu Krivopiu. Quote, "Werewolves could be distinguished from regular wolves by their distinct fur, its lighter patches symbolizing the various details of female attire, such as a brooch or beaded necklace. A bewitched werewolf could be reverted to human by feeding it bread from the tip of a knife." End quote. Werewolves weren't dangerous to humans, but they did kill domestic animals and livestock. And because of this, werewolves were taken very seriously in the 16th and 17th century of what is now modern day Estonia. And pains were taken to punish and or destroy suspected werewolves, especially if it was determined that the person transformed of their own volition, meaning that they chose to, rather than that they were cursed. To quote Eisen once again, the authorities did not show mercy towards werewolves. They believed in their existence as firmly as the common people did. Historical records show that the courts ordered the execution of many individuals suspected of being werewolves. End quote. So, to get a little bit of the history of cases against lycanthropy in the 17th century witch trials, I'm going to read a little from Estonian Werewolf History by Mary-Lee Metsvahi, an Estonian folklorist, which is a chapter in a greater book called Werewolf Histories. Quote, data about the belief of werewolves in the 17th century can be found in the protocols of witch trials. According to the preserved data, a little more than 30 people were accused of practicing lycanthropy at witch trials that took place on the territory of contemporary Estonia. End quote. Records of this actually go back to the late 16th century. During a witch trial that took place in 1617 in Kivilju, a woman named Alheit, quote, confesses to having been a werewolf 10 years earlier and doing great harm. She also claims that, together with two more witches, she killed two oxen, two horses, and other cattle and ate them. All the accused, six in total, were sentenced to be burned at the stake. End quote. It's worth noting that these women were questioned under torture. They initially denied being a werewolf and then, under torture, quote-unquote admitted to it. Unlike Isabel Gowdy, who we mentioned earlier, who confessed all her shapeshifting and perverse acts as a witch of her own volition. While there are male werewolves in Estonian folklore, it's seemingly more common for women to be werewolves. Lycanthropy has been tied to the female reproductive process of menstruation through contemporary media such as the 2000 film Gingersnaps. And another short story that I can't for the life of me remember the name or the author of that I read in a community college Gothic literature class. I really wish I could remember that. There is so much more to Estonian werewolf folklore and the history that intertwines it all. And I will provide all the sources I read from if you'd like to read more in my source list, linked in the description of wherever you are listening. I was completely infatuated with all the information I found. Okay, so what we're going to do next is I'm going to read a couple listener stories, stories that people emailed me, which I really, really appreciate. You are always welcome to do so or leave it in a comment. Just know that I'll probably ask you questions because I just love asking questions. So if you leave a comment with a story, expect a reply. And if you send me an email, expect a reply. This first one I'm going to read is from Ryan from New Hampshire. I'm just shy of 40, living in a small home with my family very close to the White Mountain National Forest in New Hampshire. It's a great way to let the sense of natural wonder fill you living in this part of the country. In lieu of any personal religious beliefs or practices, I get that itch scratched on solo hikes or family friend hikes whenever I have the time. It's a really lovely and old place, and I would encourage anyone to explore old New England with reverence if you can find a way. Today, something small happened that compelled me to share it. I drive about 5 miles in the morning to bring my 4-year-old to daycare. It's just her and I in the car. It can be a nice way to transition from the morning chaos to whatever expectations await her in school. The road we take winds along, in and out of forested land, farms, fields, and homes. This is a March morning in New Hampshire, so you can imagine the monstrous frost heaves, lingering muddy snowdrifts, and sparkling morning mists and frosted grasses. As we're going by a low stone wall on the left, with about 150 yards of field land behind that, leading up to a tree line, I hear my daughter shout and point, "Look at all the deer!" I'm pretty used to keeping my eye out for this sort of thing, so I'm surprised I didn't see them, but sure enough, there they are. Perhaps 6 or 7 white-tailed deer just bounding in the field. I'm impressed that she saw them, and I share in the coolness of seeing the group of deer. Then she followed up with, "And there's a leopard behind them." "A leopard?" I said. "Yeah, a leopard with a long neck. It's standing still. See the sticks on its head?" New Hampshire is one of those states that has lots of mountain lion sightings, but they aren't really recognized as being present within the state officially. She had asked if we could turn around and get another look. Normally, I don't really take the time when we're headed to school because of the tight morning schedule, but I humored her today. We drove back the quarter mile or so to get another look. When we reached the field again, now I was looking through my passenger window at the deer that were still putzing around, likely looking for anything green. They were startled by my pulling over and were staring at me. My daughter pointed and said, "Look, and there's the leopard." I backed up along the road as safely as I could, peering at where she was pointing. Now, I looked, and I really stared, but I didn't see anything remotely close to what she was looking at back in the tree line. She was trying so hard to describe it to me. The deer were, I guess, lingering together in a generally unbothered way, but were not running into the woods like they usually do. Ultimately, I validated what she could have been seeing by telling her that there are a lot of fallen trees that way. Maybe what she had seen had gone into hiding, or that she mistook another shape as a leopard. It's the sticks on the head that struck me as kind of funny. 10 minutes later, we parked at school and pulled next to another parent, one that I have a pretty good relationship with. They're also getting their 4-year-old out of the car. This family is kind and down to earth. They have lots of experience with animals, as they raise many on their farm. Wouldn't you know that I overheard their conversation about seeing the deer in the same spot we did? So, of course, in my incredulity, I shared that we also saw the same group of deer. Again, not unusual, but we also had the added bonus of a leopard figure in the field with them. The parent I was speaking with just kind of made a face and said, "With the ram horns?" Well, my daughter did not describe any ram horns, but she did mention sticks on the animal's head. I said, "No, I think it was sticks, so I'm told." The parent I was speaking with is very active with farm livestock, as are all of their children, who would very much know a ram's curl of horns. I'm not sure my daughter would have made that connection, as we just don't have as much farm animal exposure, so I can see her calling that type of thick horn sticks, like maybe some type of gnarled root. My fellow parent shared that her 4-year-old in the car with her was commenting on the deer and the big sheep in the field. There is a farm or two on the route in question, but sheep are not present there, to the best of my knowledge. As I'm driving away afterwards, just thinking about this whole thing, I pulled over again at the field and see the deer still playing. Playing is the best word, I guess. That's what it seemed like they were doing. Not really fleeing into the woods, but still being active. Maybe they were just energized. I saw nothing else, but in my mind, all of the little pieces started to coalesce. The funny deer behavior. Two families with small children seeing something along with the deer, with relating descriptions. All so close to the spring equinox. Of course, my mind floated over to the idea of a satyr. Though, if that were true, I guess my old eyes wouldn't let me play a part in it. So, I really liked this story. I love the oddity of Ryan's daughter seeing a long-necked leopard with sticks on its head among the deer. Here's a little bit more info and description Ryan gave me in a follow-up email. Quote, "I told the story to my older son, who was 10, after school, and he was really fascinated by it, and we all discussed it again. We learned that my daughter called it a leopard specifically because she saw spots, with a mixture of, I'm guessing, a blonde, she calls it yellow, and black hair of varying length. We asked her to draw a picture, and from what I'm seeing, she focused a lot of the long hair around the face, something like a male lion with spotted fur on its trunk or midsection. In my mind's eye, she's describing what she thinks may have been spots, but maybe could have been varying shades of blonde fur to black. It's just wild to me that 2 children under 5 made a positive note of something unusual in the same field, probably minutes apart, that two separate adult drivers could not see, end quote. I do find it really fascinating that the adults were not able to locate and identify this animal that their children described. And in both cases, it doesn't sound like the kids just saw a deer. I mean, the field was full of deer, so obviously there was something about this animal that struck out as different from the other animals in the field. I did ask a couple more questions about this encounter. I said, I'm guessing your daughter knows the word antlers, and if the sticks she saw in the creature's head were antlers, she would have been able to say so. Did you notice if there were any bucks in the field, or was it all does or female deer? I was wondering if maybe your daughter was just describing a stag among the female deer, but even if she didn't know what that was, the other child who saw it, who had more of a knowledge of animals, probably would have clocked it. Plus, they described a big sheep with ram's horns. And Ryan kindly replied, quote, she would have definitely known the difference between antlers and sticks, which is why I was imagining that if it was antlers she saw, they must have been exaggerated or tangled or maybe kind of matted in the way horns can curl tightly to an animal's head. She's sticking with calling them sticks or branches. I did get a good look at the group of deer as I was pulled over for a brief time on the roadside, and no bucks were present that I could see. The feeling I got was very social and playful amongst them, like a frolic that didn't expect to be observed in that moment. We've since returned to that spot a few times since the original morning, and the same sight couldn't be found. So that's got me ruling out the possibility of a fallen log, broken tree, etc. End quote. I also love that this whole experience brought satyrs to mind for Ryan. The proximity of the event to the spring equinox, and the description of the possibly curled horns, and the long beard-like hair on the face were a couple of factors that I think inspired this idea for him. So I must say, that also derailed me for a bit because I had to go searching for other satyr sightings and experiences online, and I did find a few. A couple of brief ones from Reddit that I probably will save because they're a little vague, but I did find a really good one from the Phantoms and Monsters website. So I'm going to read that, and then we will get to the next listener story. But this was posted on the Phantoms and Monsters website on January 15th, 2022. I had planned a 3-day trip up north for the coming spring, camping in the wilds north of the rural municipality of Canwood, Saskatchewan, Canada. We had planned this trip since Christmas. We'd assumed the snow would be completely gone, but our trail was really slushy and was very cold. So the original 3 nights was cut to 2. We saddled up our horses and headed out. The first tip-off that this trip wouldn't be fun was our horses. My trusty old white gelding was off his rocker. He'd never been aggressive, ever, but he was wailing, bucking, and biting the moment we got onto the trail. My friend's horse, who was usually the energetic one, stayed completely silent and hung her head the whole way to the first stop. When the sun started setting, we found a patch of trees to make a pen around. We used this electrified cord that connects to a battery. That's when I unsaddled my boy and put him in the enclosure. He calmed down and grazed alongside his buddy. While I tended the horses, my friend set up the tent and noticed that my bedroll was gone, along with my hat. This made no sense, as I had tied them to my saddle earlier. So I looked around and couldn't find them near us. Then I went back to my saddle and noticed that the leather cord that tied the items down had been crudely sawed in half. I thought it had snapped along the trail. I walked up from the small valley we were in and looked around. I found my hat about 80 feet from where we had followed the trail in. I had thought it maybe flew away when I was riding, until I picked it up. It stank terribly, really, really bad. It smelled like a mix of burnt hair and rotten milk. I held it far away from me and went back to the camp. When I got there, my friend said that he had left to chop wood, come back, and the boots he left outside of the tent were moved and stank too, with the same smell. By this point, we assumed a skunk was around. But it did not smell like a skunk, my friend pointed out. Indeed, it was way more putrid. It was so bad, we resorted to piling snow on the items just to block the stink. My friend began getting scared, wondering if an infected wolf was out there. I laughed because I knew this area well, and no wolves live around here. Too many farmers with shotguns. Besides that, no animal other than a skunk would so thoroughly stink up the place. I thought it may have been a small animal that was sick, marking its territory. I've seen coyotes do similar things, but coyotes would never come that close to humans and foreign objects. But we dismissed it as harmless and went to bed. The next morning, we saddled up the horses and noticed that my friend's mare was covered in leaves, but they stuck to her skin with what looked like tree sap. She got really angry when we peeled them off, as if she was protecting them. We looked around and couldn't find any sap leaking, and my horse was still clean. This was the point when my friend brought up woodland creatures and spirits and how they're known to do this. I really don't like to believe in such things, but the way that his horse had protected the leaves and was licking at the sap made me wonder. It'd be nice if it was a good omen, because my stinky hat certainly was not. My poor friend had to wear those boots, too. But we rode on and set up another camp the next night. We settled in without anything unusual happening. The horses were calm, the wind had settled, and the stench had almost gone from our stuff. But then I went to relieve myself at about 3 a.m., and before I turned behind a tree, I smelled the same rancid odor as before. I was nervous now, because whatever was making that foul odor had followed us. I was really scared that it may have been a cougar that wandered too far south because of this long winter. I went back and grabbed the small hunting rifle we brought and told my friend where I was going. I went behind a tree and finished my business, then got back up and looked around, gun on hip. A shadow moved slowly behind a tree about 40 to 50 feet away. I hummed, lowly, hoping to hear it move or breathe so I could figure out what it was. The thing perfectly echoed my melody, but it had a guttural sound to it. Okay, definitely not a cougar, but my heart began to pound as I realized that nothing could do that but a person. I yelled, "Who's there?" And then the rotting odor came back, so strong that I began to heave. My friend was calling out from the cabin for me. I kept my eyes on the tree the thing stood behind and called out again, covering my nose. The leaves crunched and it hummed again. I was beginning to cry and back up towards the tent. The horses were letting out really low, rumbling nickers, which made me more uncomfortable because horses only do that when they're happy, and I certainly wasn't. My friend ran to my side just in time for me to keel over and vomit. He also was on the verge of sickness, but he pointed the flashlight around and yelled out into the trees. The thing ran, the leaves crunched behind it, and I kid you not, what I saw looked like a man, but with an animal's head. It was so dark, so I might be wrong, but dear God, I know what I saw. It looked like a satyr being from Greek mythology. It was about the height of a man, its legs looked like those of a horse or goat, and its limbs were skinny, and it was hairy, especially on its head. That is such a good story. The climax and the ending gave me chills while I was reading it. Especially the part where the author, the OP, hums and it hums back the exact same notes or melody that he hummed in the first place. Really, really spooky. And then this smell, this really stinky, really strong smell. So not only did that come up earlier when I read one of the bunny stories where the man, he was riding dirt bikes, and his friends said they saw a big rabbit bleeding from its mouth run behind a bush, and they smelled a really horrible smell. I mentioned that this is common with Bigfoot sightings. I think it's just kind of common in paranormal sightings. At least, I believe that's the basis of a book written by author Joshua Cutchin called The Brimstone Deceit, which I actually haven't read. I've just heard him talk about it, so I kind of have a vague concept of what it's about, and it's about that sulfurous smell that I guess has a lot of ties, not only to Bigfoot sightings, but other kind of paranormal sightings. Something I'll have to read one day, but there is something about that smell that seems to accompany these kinds of experiences, and I have no idea why that is. So, really, really good story. I'm so glad I found that. So I have to give a double thanks to Ryan, first for sharing his story in the first place, and then also for prompting me to find that very interesting and spooky story. So, next, we are going to close out with another listener story. This one is from Loretta, and she actually has sent me a lot of stories. She has had basically a lifetime of stories, of experiences, really, really interesting experiences. And she also presents them in a really interesting way. I can tell that she's just a really compelling storyteller and probably the funnest grandma that you can have. So I'm going to read just one of her stories that she sent me that fits this kind of strange animal theme. I live in Indiana in the USA, and as far back as I can remember, I've seen things most would not believe in. My parents never ignored me or acted like I had imaginary friends. My dad was Native American, and my mama was Irish, so maybe that's why. I was taught that there's way more to this world than what most are aware of. My dad told me some are meant to see while others are not, and that no matter who or what it is, there's always good and bad in them. You have to have both to bring balance. One time, a strange-looking cat showed up. Now, I have been dragging home every kind of animal imaginable since I could walk, but my dad, after seeing this cat, told me not to bring it into the house. He said that I could feed and water and sit outside and pet it, but under no circumstances was I to bring it in. When I asked why, his response was, quote, "We don't know who or what that thing is." So I spent probably a good couple hours feeding, petting the cat, but I never saw it again. I'm not sure how to explain it, but it sort of looked like the shape of its head was upside down. Like, a cat's face will be rounder at the top and get narrow as you get down to its mouth, but this cat was the opposite. The cat was a tortoiseshell, and I don't remember its eyes, just the weird shape of its head. I spent the whole next day looking for it, but I never saw it again. So, like I said, that's just a brief snippet of one of Loretta's many, many experiences. But that one really struck out to me, even just besides fitting the theme as just really odd. I do tend to be kind of drawn to the vague, weird stories. Just because, I guess, I don't know, there's something about them that you can't put your finger on that's strange. So there was just something about this cat, something off about its appearance, but then also her dad picked up on something being off too. And it's not like he just didn't want her to bring home a cat. Sounds like she did this all the time. He said, "We don't know what it is." Well, he said, "We don't know who or what it is." So that's kind of a strange remark, because if you thought it was a cat, you would know exactly what it was. So her dad seems very spiritual, and from what she's told me, has a lot of spiritual insight, and she does as well. So sounds like it's probably a good idea to just take his word on what to do. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe it was something trying to take on the form of a cat, but it couldn't quite get it right. You kind of hear these stories, especially in areas where there's maybe southern areas or Appalachian areas where there's haints and things where something will try and take on the form of an animal, but it's just, there's something just kind of off about it. Like it tried, but it didn't quite get it right. There was a story like that I read in a previous episode about a creature. Oh gosh, what is it called? A plat eye. About a creature called a plat eye that is said to do that very thing. Take the form of an animal, but you can tell that something's not right. And in the story I read, it took the form of a cow that looked distorted and I think might have even been standing up. I'm not sure, but I'm sure we'll hear more from Loretta in the future and maybe Ryan too. I think he said he might have another story that he'll tell me in the future. I have received some other stories from people too. I also get them in the comments, so I will try and introduce these more. If they fit with the theme, then I'll do it then, but maybe I can just kind of do a listener stories focused episode as well. So I definitely encourage people to write me if they feel like sharing, because I absolutely love it. I'm so honored when someone chooses to do that. So with that, we are going to conclude the episode for the evening. I hope you found this all to be interesting. I was compelled to do this follow-up to the Strange Animals episode that I really did pretty recently from this point. I think it was just a month ago. But I just, yeah, I wanted to follow up and get out these other stories and other topics that I set aside as I was writing that episode. So, thank you to everyone who has shared a story with me. Thank you to anyone who's listening. I will be back very soon with more. And until next time, please take care and good night.